Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
All right, hour number two of the nation, Brian Dantzel, Elite Media Network, going to join us, talk all things college football. As we just had a little Darty, we'll pick things up with a little Finest coming up. We got Krusty's Corner, all the breakdown from what happened yesterday in a Cowboys L as they dropped the season finale to the Chargers, 34-17. But let's welcome in our buddy right now, Brian Dantzel, Elite Media Network. Brian, how are you? How was all the consumption of the first round of the college football playoff? He's on the Zoomy Zoom.
We see him on the Zoomy Zoom.
We see you. We'll figure this out with you there, Brian. We see you on the Zoom. He's located on the Zoom. We see him. He's waving. He's talking to us. He's in the video. He's in the building. We just can't hear you yet, but we'll get you here in just a second, as we did not talk about the two games after what happened with A&M Miami. Everybody ripping on the group of five. Choppy trying to take a victory lap earlier today. Here's the thing. If last year's first round had been more competitive, because you didn't have Boise State. Boise State was the non-group of five representative. They got the bye. They didn't play until the next round and then lost to Penn State in the Fiesta Bowl. The closest game in the first round last year with all the big dogs was Indiana-Notre Dame.
Yeah.
10-point game. So, yeah, Tennessee, Ohio State, what happened? Ohio State beat the crap out of Tennessee. Texas, Clemson, what happened? Texas ran Clemson. So all the games in the first round last year also were not good. I don't know how you necessarily fix this, but I don't think it's a group of five problem right now. I think that Tulane deserved to be in that game, and they moved the football some in the beginning. I thought they were going to actually be competitive for a little bit, and then, of course, Ole Miss runs away with this thing. JMU, I'm with you. You want to argue JMU shouldn't have been in there? Blame the ACC and their tiebreaker. That's really what screwed this thing and put JMU in there. But the ACC is going to work to fix that, and we'll probably go to a group of 16 next year, I think, will be most likely what ends up happening here.
Yeah, I mean, at least, you know, this year you've gotten the two upsets, right, where Alabama goes into Norman and wins, and you get Miami going into College Station and winning. So this year, if you look at it, like the group of fives, they got clobbered, and the quote-unquote – blue blood kind of big dog programs, they went and handled business on the road. So now it's kind of flipped a little bit from that standpoint from last year to this year. But I mean, more than likely, like, no matter how much like the expansion factor, these guys aren't going to go on deep runs. Like you have your top 4 to 6 teams, and that's what it's going to be. So whether you expand it, like, it doesn't matter. Most of those first round games are going to end up getting out of hand.
Yeah, I mean, to me, there has to be some. I appreciate these guys having a great season. I kind of want to believe, though, if you finish in the top 12, then you should be considered for the.
So let's just make it. Whoever's the top 12 gets in.
Yeah.
And let's eliminate the conference championship games.
I think there's something there. I think we got Brian on the phone now. If you want to go,
Brian Dantzel joining us, Elite Media Network. Brian, we were just having the conversation. I think you were able to hear some of that we were talking about, the group of five. So, I mean, now it happened, right? So you had JMU get blown out. You had Tulane get blown out. So everyone that was saying they don't deserve to be in the playoff, they're taking their victory lap now. What's your take on this? And then, you know, really the lack of competitiveness even last year in the first round that we saw.
Boys, good afternoon. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah for those who celebrate.
Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, you're right. We ended up getting to the first round of the playoffs, and once again, it just turned into one of those, do we want to see these things moments? It was 4-0 for the home team last year, an average margin of victory of 19.3 points. It was 2-2 this season, an average margin of victory of 16.3 points. Are we wasting the notion of a playoff here, right? We love the notion professionally. We know we're going to get a good game. Well, what ended up happening? We got Alabama and Oklahoma on a standalone Friday night game where the margin of victory was 10. You get Miami and Texas A&M, two very good names in the business as well. The spread was 7. So at the end of the day, like James Madison going to Oregon, not exactly what we wanted to see. Tulane versus Ole Miss, we can go back on this and say, look, I would have rather seen the ACC champion in there to take that beating as opposed to someone like a Tulane because we already saw that game. And so we talked about it a couple weeks ago. It's a very slippery slope when you get through, all right, who gets in and who doesn't, and it's 12 too much. So that leaves us for the conversation.
A&M, wow, offensively, I don't think any of us saw that coming. I mean, Eric just went through with all the wind and the field goal kicking situation was just brutal for them. What were your takeaways from A&M's performance? And could Colin Klein maybe have been a little distracted knowing he was taking that K-State gig?
And this is probably where my biggest gripe with the CFP and the way it kind of occurs is, right? A&M now, we've seen their final two games of the season. It was absolutely their worst games of the season. They end up giving 5 sacks to a Miami defense that is obviously very hungry. And 7 sacks to a Miami defense who's obviously very hungry. And at the end of the day, they just weren't able to move the ball, and Marcel Reed wasn't exactly good when he was supposed to be. So on the outside of things, when you take a look at how dangerous of a Miami team this is, and I think you could talk to all the college football pundits, offensive and defensive line-wise, they're probably the best team in the tournament. I'm sure that Indiana and Ohio State are probably going to have a gripe with that, but at the end of the day, they're now going to face, and thank goodness for everybody over at the Cotton Bowl committee with Scotty Rogers and all of our good friends, they now get to see a Miami take on an Ohio State where Ohio State gets to walk in and they feel like, coming in as the previous national champion, hey, we're going to run this. But at the end of the day, that's not the way it works. It's about how you come into the game. They just ended up giving up 5 sacks to Indiana, who ended up taking the Big Ten crown away from them. They now have to face that Miami team with that defensive line, who basically all the front four is NFL bound. So good luck to Ohio State and Dallas. It doesn't look good for you. The 9.5-point spread at this point is way too much, and you guys are going to get a great game in Dallas.
Brian, do you think this is one of those things where with A&M, their schedule ended up being one of those things that we should have seen coming where they really didn't play anybody that was that impressive, and when they did, Texas, Miami, they really got rocked?
Yeah, I remember being on with you boys probably towards the latter end of November, and I ended up telling you, like, at the end of the day, did A&M really play anybody? And the answer clearly was no. They get to Texas in that big standalone game on a Friday night after Thanksgiving, and they end up taking their beating there. Now, again, had Texas played better in that first half, that might have been a lot larger of a spread, and we could have easily downtrodden A&M at that point and said, maybe they're not worthy of this spot. But, the fact that they lost to a rival in a game that everybody saw, we kind of said, all right, they're going to get into the playoff, but where should we see them? And again, at the end of the day, had they been a higher seed, they wouldn't have needed to face someone like a Miami and probably got away with it. But I do feel like their scheduling probably worked against them. Coming in 11-0 was probably the aberration that them and their fan base needed to go ahead and kind of keep them in the discussion. But at the end of the day, when they needed to play their best, they just didn't.
Is there any advantage to the situation what George is about to face with, already having played somebody? And the thing in the playoffs, you'd like to believe that, okay, maybe you're going to get somebody you haven't faced. But the fact that they know this Ole Miss team, is that a big advantage to them?
I think it is. And so not just the advantage, right? Let's not forget, boys, Ole Miss had an 8-point lead going into the fourth quarter against Georgia.
Yeah.
So the biggest key factor that's missing at this point is Lane Kiffin.
Right.
Someone who basically can, quote unquote, let it all hang out, right? Because he's no longer there and over brought us to school there. It just turns into one of those. Had this happened weeks ago, it probably would have been a game that we wanted to see. Georgia's been on this stage before, and
right.
Ole Miss has not. right? So this really does turn into a chip on the shoulder for Georgia, because they're like, look, this is nothing new to us. We're just going to go ahead and play our game and take this team out because we know we're capable of it. And so going back to something that that we had all talked about earlier in terms of the CFP, this is my issue with the CFP is we're no longer playing one season. We're playing essentially two different seasons.
Yeah.
You've got your 2025 edition of your team, and that's who got you into the playoff. Now, all of a sudden, you're dealing with coaches that have moved on, players who want to enter your transfer portal. You are now dealing with a 2026 version of your team playing at the end of December. And so, again, the notion of a playoff, fantastic. But at the end of the day, it's just not what it was intended to be, if you will.
Brian Dantzel with the Show 105 Through the Fan. You're absolutely right. I mean, Oregon's seeing kids leave and enter the portal now. They're about to play Texas Tech, of course, coming up in the Orange Bowl. And you know, Joey McGuire, Texas Tech's coach, has thrown out ideas of moving the schedule. I think it's clear they've got to do something where not only do you have signing day in December, you've got these coaches that maybe that's why the schools have to then have their coach in place. I mean, I don't know if there's an easy answer, Brian. Well, what are your thoughts on what they can do to fix this?
So I was at the National Football Foundation gala a couple of weeks ago in Las Vegas. They ended up inducting a couple of head coaches into the Hall of Fame amongst a number of players. One of those coaches that I spoke to was Coach Saban. And kind of off the record, I did have him on for about 10 minutes, and we talked about, you know, his lore and him getting into the college football playoff and, you know, the seven national championships and all. But at the end of the day, like, we wanted to talk about how do we fix this? And at the end of the day, it turns into a money issue.
Yeah.
The schools are never going to relinquish what the actual school calendar is. So you're playing against two different things here. And at the end of the day, there's so much money involved. I'm not sure that you can backtrack now out of this. You've already opened Pandora's box to 12 different teams, and you've already moved your national championship game to play on Martin Luther King night, which is very, very deep for a college football season, right? We can all remember when the college football season would begin around Labor Day and end on January 1st.
Yep.
They need to find a good way to and a good mixture to fix that and have that end the same way. That way the school calendar just gets taken away completely. But again, boys, at the end of the day, we were just talking about it. You just don't fix the money problem. It's there, yeah. And we've got to deal with it.
Yeah, Brian, and you're exactly right. And I, if I'm an administrator or one of these university presidents, and I'm having to put out, you know, $20, $30 million for NIL money that the government has made me do and all that, you're not touching my schedule. You're not touching my timelines or anything like that. You know, the reason we're doing this is so I could pay all my student athletes. And so if I'm a president or a athletic director, all that, you could keep coming at me with move the calendar. And I'm just going to keep shaking my head, because where am I going to get the money if I don't do it the way we currently do it?
Correct. Yeah. And at the end of the day, just like, you know, Brian, with your LSU team, it's just one of those, I can go ahead and give the $20.5 million to my kids.
Yeah.
It's the other $25 million that I'm worried about that I need to give extra to make myself relevant within this CFP process. And so that's kind of the issue that everybody's having to deal with now. And let's face it, folks, everybody can't do it. You know, I know that there's a very good contingency of North Texas folks in the room there. And at the end of the day, yeah, it would have been great to see them in. But would they have fallen upon the sword just like a JMU, like Tulane? Absolutely. And again, I just don't know that that's good for the nature of the game.
Yeah, JMU has a $50 million athletic budget, and Oregon has a $150 million. I mean, it's not. But you know what? Hey, congratulations, JMU. You went in there. You were competitive. You did what you had to do. You got your payday. You know, that's all, you know, that's all pretty much what they knew. They accomplished their mission. Mm-hmm. You know, they have been nice to win the game, but they weren't going to win that game.
It's a great point, Brian. And not just that, right? So for getting to the first round, they end up getting the millions of dollars that come along with being in the CFP. But it doesn't come to the school. It goes to the conference. So now the conference ends up getting that money.
Yeah.
So, hey, guess what? If this is what we really wanted to see, let's have North Texas face, Ohio State in early September for a $2 million game.
Right.
That money actually does go to North
there
Texas.
There you go. I mean, like I said, to me, it's about the money goes to the conference, but, You know, there is a, you know, there's money that goes to us. It makes the conference stronger. Mm-hmm. So when there are considerations about, oh, should this team be in the playoff or not, because maybe the conference is stronger, maybe it helps people make, because maybe the games are a little bit better because of the players that you're able to get.
So maybe that's one of the stipulations that we add here. Now that everybody's got to play 9 power conference games, including the your 9 conference games, and then one more power 4 conference, maybe that's the way we do this, right? The 2 non-conference games against a non-power 4, they now end up getting $2.5 million to come and play on somebody's campus. And again, these are the games that we end up seeing where, like, James Madison heads to Michigan.
Brian, which team has the best chance at a round 2 upset, Miami over Ohio State or Bama over Indiana?
Definitely Bama. I think you're going to get a really interesting Bama team coming out of this. Now, that being said, I think we're all going to go ahead and kind of joke around about this, but we all do realize that Kalen DeBoer is waiting to leave, yes? And the longer that they end up winning, he's got to sit and stay pat at Alabama. There's a job open in Michigan. His name is all over it. It's dirty at this point. We don't exactly know how long he's going to last for. But at the end of the day, like, he does have the pedigree to go ahead and get over an unproven, at this point, Indiana team, right? Yes, they've beaten Ohio State. Ohio State didn't exactly show very much in that Big Ten championship game. So at the end of the day, pat on the back to Indiana, but I think they're going to get their true test to the Rose Bowl on January 1st.
Ryan, you're the man. Thank you so much, bro. Always fun talking college football. We'll be doing it again soon with you.
Absolutely. Have a great afternoon, guys.
There he goes. Brian Dantzel, Elite Media Network, with us here in the G-Bag Nation. Kalen DeBoer, only coach to win a CFP game with 2 different schools after he knocked off Oklahoma with Alabama. All right. Let's do a little football's finest next, Eric.
Yes, we have your stat of the day, the TD of the year, and which team had the best victory of the weekend.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Next to the nation. Here we go. It's a Football Monday here in the nation. Football's finest coming up here in just a second. Segment here in the nation brought to you by the Frankels. Life is unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you or a loved one has been hurt in a car or truck wreck, go ahead and call the Frankels first. 214-333-3333. We got you a Cowboys Monday edition of Krusty's Corner coming up in about 15 minutes. But right now, it's time for this.
But at the end of the day, it's about taking it a day by a time. A day and a day, just continuing to do that.
You cannot lose games in the NFL and still win.
To win games, you have to win the game, not lose the game.
It doesn't matter. He pulls another rabbit out of his head.
So what, it's like the first time in a million years we got back-to-back NFC East champs?
20 years, first time in 20 years that has happened, and really, Cowboys, looking at you, screwed this whole thing up.
They did. They dropped the ball in a big way. Defensively, as much of a disaster as you could ever fathom. Justin Herbert was nasty. And I know it's like, hey, it's the Cowboys defense, and we've seen it so much, but like, he had some throws yesterday that were like sort of jarring at how impressive they were. And what he was doing, just roasting, like, Savone Revel, get some. Trayvon Diggs, get some. Really, whoever, and they couldn't pressure him. Like, it was just another disaster class defensively where Matt Eberflus doesn't have to get yelled at by Brian Schottenheimer, just distance himself. And that was certainly not something that helped in any way.
Only game all season he has not been sacked.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was just so easy. I mean, how much of the game it was just whatever we want. They had, I know Bobby pointed out, they had like a 14-play stretch where they're moving the ball down the field and they're not even touching third down. It's just first down, second down, first down.
Chunk play after chunk play.
It was a long afternoon for the defense, and especially not having Quinnen Williams dealing with the concussion neck situation. I'm glad, I know he was kind of like a game time 50-50 decision. Glad that he did not play, but you can see just even the little bit of difference right there with him not being on the field. They try to go more man coverage. They try to blitz. Nothing works. Overshown gets another. He's got a concussion now, so we'll have to wait and see with him. I don't know. I think, Broadus, you were kind of saying you didn't really want to see him the rest of the season anyways.
No,
just let him heal
let
up
it
and
go. Yep.
Have a full off season.
Yep, let it go.
But just add him to the injury list there, which is certainly disappointing. But all game, I mean, in terms of EPA per drive, yesterday's Chargers' performance against the Cowboys was the second best by any offense in a single game this season.
Yeah,
of course it was.
8 possessions, 4 touchdowns, 2 field goals, no turnovers.
Brutal.
Yeah.
And that's a Chargers offense that loves winning 16-13.
Yeah, they weren't. I mean, they do have talented skill players. Trey Harris emerged. I think he's going to be really good. Gadsden only had one catch. He was a guy that I was scared of, but you had Keenan Allen making plays out there. Quentin Johnson was fantastic. Ladd McConkey, Amarian Hampton. They all looked their best, and it's not surprising that it happened against this Cowboys defense.
No, not at all. Not at all. But it is still extremely frustrating. And I feel for Savone Revel. Like, this dude has barely got to play in college last year, gets the injury, doesn't have training camp, doesn't have preseason, gets thrown into the fire, and he's definitely paying the price for that right now. There was a tackle or two attempt that was pretty frustrating.
Yeah, the third down on the sideline trying
to one on the sideline.
He went too high.
He did. He tackled high.
All he had to do was knock that guy out of bounds, just put your shoulder down, push him. He went high. I don't know why he did it. When you watch the tape, it's like there's not a lot of room over there. He just had to push the guy out of bounds. You're probably going to get a punt situation there. You can see the reaction from Harbaugh on the sidelines when they get the first down. He's like, thank God I didn't have to make a decision. You know, one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
He just went high and it went over the top of the
Trey
receiver.
Harris.
Yeah, and you know, got the first down. That's the unfortunate thing.
Yeah, yeah. Justin Herbert and the Chargers offense was dealing, and then the Cowboys offense, like the way they can look amazing for an extended period of time, and then all of a sudden they can't score any points. I don't get it. I mean, it was nice to see George Pickens have a bounce back performance.
Yep.
That was really encouraging. Lamb was a little bit more quiet on the day. Flannoy was making great plays until he got banged up. But it was just your offense, once again, struggling when it comes to trying to score touchdowns. And I think the most frustrating offensive play of the day for me was the choice on third down. I think it was right after Flannoy should have had the touchdown. Tyler Smith gets the hold.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's third and long. And you're running like a corner route in the back of the end zone to Turpin? Like, that's the play?
Oh, yeah. Turpin's got no chance to make that play.
No chance. Like, why is that even being drawn up?
No.
That's an obvious, if you're running that, that's Lamb or Pickens.
Yeah.
There is no other option on who that play should be.
Yeah.
That was, I don't understand what they were doing on that play.
Well, there was a lot. I mean, it's Krusty's Corner, I'm going to get into, because there's some obvious adjustments. I'm going to walk you guys through what Jesse Minter did to you first half, second half.
He switched it up on you?
He switched it up on you. He did. You know, and the really good coordinators are able to do that. What they look at, okay, like I say, 340, trust me. I don't want to get into it now.
It's coming up next.
Yeah, but
trust the corner.
Yeah, I'm gonna walk you through what this guy did during this game, and to kind of give you an idea where you're like, well, why do this or why do that? But there's some coaches in this league that do a great job of making adjustments, and I think Minter did a great job of that. You're just talking about an offensive series, obviously.
Yeah.
But throwing the ball to Turpin, running the back of the end zone.
Yeah, it's foolish.
That's not somebody that can't. There's no elevation to his game. There's lack of it's the wrong.
It's like, do you not know your own players?
Yeah, that was not good.
Yeah, that's a huge indictment. Not sure what Shadi was doing on that play. Now, I think my favorite play from the football weekend has to be Kenneth Gainwell's touchdown.
Oh, my goodness. What a freaking snag.
Credit to the Steelers going into Detroit on a short week after playing the freezing cold game versus the Dolphins, going into Detroit and winning that game and totally bottling up Gibbs.
Incredible.
And the rushing attack of the Lions. Mm-hmm. Man, that was a statement game right there for the Steelers. But Kenneth Gainwell down the sidelines, it ends up being like a 46-yard touchdown where he's falling down. Anzalone, God help him, out there in coverage 50 yards down the field. He has no chance. Gainwell, by the way, isn't he a free agent?
He is. And yes. I mean, he was a cheap signing coming over from the Eagles. He's going to earn himself some money this offseason.
Yeah, he's got to be the biggest prize of the running back group here. I mean,
Breece Hall.
I mean, I don't know, dude. Kenneth Gainwell.
You're going to elevate Kenneth Gainwell now over Breece?
I mean,
Jalen Warren was the guy that really, I mean, Gainwell made that play. Warren, I think, had a career day. He had like almost 150 rushing yards for that.
No, Warren had like two giant touchdown runs in the second half of that game. Gainwell's had a damn good season.
No, he has. I think he'd be an awesome compliment to Javonte Williams if you could pair them together.
Oh,
they're perfect.
Sure.
He's got Williams, who's like the battering ram. Gainwell, good guy catching out of the backfield, speedster as well. I'd love to make that happen, but he is going to go ahead and get himself the money. But the Steelers really did what the Lions have been doing to people. They just physically dominated at the line of scrimmage. They were able to run the football, and they smothered the run.
Yeah, and we'll get into some of the controversy of that game here in a little bit. There was a lot of controversy in that game, from DK Metcalf to the final play, the penalties, the refs. Just really hilarious the way that game ended. But it was a heck of an effort from the Lions to try and come back and win that game. But a huge win for the Steelers. A lot of big wins for the weekend. Like, what's the best win of the weekend? Is it the Bears and their ridiculous comeback,
the
onside kick on Saturday night versus the Packers? Shout out to Malik Willis stepping in. Yeah. That's another free agent. Somebody's going to go out there and pay Malik Willis and say, that's my guy.
Yeah,
that's going to happen this offseason. But the Bears with a great win, and that was huge for us, right?
It was huge.
Honestly, we needed the Lions to beat the Steelers to kind of just box out the Packers from the postseason in general. But that Bears win on Saturday night was huge. The Patriots had a huge win, but give me Jacksonville.
Yeah, Jacksonville, I think, was without it. No team had beaten Denver in Denver.
Nope.
And they went out, and nobody did to that defense what they were able to do.
Yeah.
It was unreal. And Trevor Lawrence right now is playing. It's like rewind the clocks 2 or 3 years ago when he was able to bring them back against the Cowboys, and his numbers were unbelievable the second half of the season. I think he's got like 10 touchdowns, no picks his last four games.
I believe
he does. He does. 10 touchdowns. A couple of those are rushing, but no turnovers. Two-game span. That joins Josh Allen, Drew Brees, and Pat Mahomes as the only players who have done that.
Circle back on the Chicago win. I think that's the sixth game they've won this year in the last 2 minutes of a game.
Yeah, they have been one of those teams. It's like the one score thing.
Yeah, they've won. Yeah, I think they've now won six games in the last 2 minutes.
That's why we thought they were kind of frauds throughout the season, because it was like they're just kind of scraping by here.
Well, Dallas, I mean, honestly, they were 0-2 in Dallas. They beat Dallas, and they've been on this run ever since.
Hey, it's credit to the spaghetti bag. It's the spaghetti bag. It's now six home wins in a row for the Bears ever since their fans snuck in a Ziploc bag full of spaghetti.
Yeah.
And now he's obviously keeping that going. There's no way that he didn't do that on Saturday.
Oh, he was definitely spaghettiing out there.
And then you have Caleb Williams wearing the cheese grater hat the next day while he's signing autographs. That's a pretty good rivalry, like, okay, you got the cheese heads, then we'll go with the cheese grater.
Yeah, they won back-to-back weeks 25-24, then got a 47-42 win, 24-20 win, 19-17 win.
Yeah.
Crazy. 22-16, of course, beat the Packers. Nuts what they've been able to do, and right now sitting with the one seed.
Yeah, and I know we'll get into the DK Metcalf stuff, but we haven't gotten any word on that yet, have we?
No, like,
we
no suspension or anything from the league. The fan is now denying using any slur during the incident with DK Metcalf, but I guess this also does date back to previously when he was with Seattle and they went and played the Lions.
Same dude? There
was an incident with this guy, yes.
Season ticket holder right there chirping.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the allegations from the law firm that for this guy, these allegations are completely false, was the statement from Mr. Kennedy.
You wouldn't go over there and punch a fan if he didn't say anything.
I agree with
Trust
you 100%.
Initially, we thought it was just him using his full like birth certificate name.
No, that's...
Like, that's not going to... You're
no,
not, like,
hell no.
You're not going to get drawn off sides like
that. I sat 20 years behind the visitor's bench at Texas Stadium, four rows back, and yelled... Well, not me yelling. People around me yelling to the point where players were thinking about coming up in the stands, and like they were stopped from doing that because it had probably been like what happened at that Pistons game if those players would have got up there.
Oh yeah,
Malice,
yeah.
Man, Palace.
There are things that are said to that bench area. Trust me, I've been down on that bench area too. There's a lot of things that are said that you don't know. I mean, like it takes everything for a player not to go up in the stands and kick somebody's ass for some of the things that are being said.
Yeah.
So I got to believe that this guy is probably in the wrong.
Yeah, and if it's a repeat deal where apparently DK already had told the Seattle staff about this, and I guess just didn't inform Pittsburgh, the fan needs to be banned. That guy doesn't need to be shown up again.
No doubt.
I'm sure DK will also get a suspension.
You can yell at these players, but don't be yelling stuff that's
well, don't have if you've got two different situations with said player, I think now a one-time fine, two times, the fan also needs to be held accountable here.
The funniest part that nobody's even really talking about at all, and it's just because of the culture around the rabid nature of being a sports fan, but like he's wearing a blue wig. Like that's sports for you right there. You get the painted faces, you get grown men who are acting like children on Halloween.
That's what it's all about.
And he's wearing the bluest wig you've ever seen in your life, and that's what DK Metcalf is grabbing onto before he kind of gives him I don't know, can you even really call it a punch? But it was certainly something that DK Metcalf is going to end up paying the price for, and they both should. Like the fan, we don't need that here, and DK, my gosh, That is not how you want to. And then just nothing happening during the game, I thought was funny. Like we're just gonna pretend that nothing happened here. Mm. All the cameras have it, but there's not gonna be a flow. We're not gonna dress it.
Nope.
You're not gonna be sat down. Not anything. We're just gonna keep playing through this thing, and then we'll see how the league handles it. And it'll be interesting. Like how many games is this? And this morning they're talking about for the season.
Yeah, I mean,
Sean
Archer,
like DK Metcalf should be out for the season.
Yeah.
Including the playoffs.
Known as a show of overreaction.
I don't think they'll do that.
6-10 every morning.
I could see maybe a 2-game suspension, which is the remainder of the season.
Trust me,
if they're in the playoffs, then he's back.
Yeah.
Well, my favorite stat of the day, before we get to Krusty's Corner, the New York Jets are the first team in NFL history to not have an interception in 15 consecutive games. Their defense, Aaron Glenn's defense, has yet to intercept a football this year.
Hey, that's a defensive stat the Cowboys aren't included in. Let's go.
That's true.
We're looking for positives here, boys.
Small wins.
Let's go.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and get to Krusty's Corner.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you how this one went down yesterday. There's some things you need to know. We'll do that next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Thank you, Lucius. We'll get to Football Fix coming up on the other side. Lenore Sellers is going to be returning to South Carolina. He's got a deal done with the school. Oh, he's going back.
Did they announce they've got a deal done?
They did. He's inked the deal to return to South Carolina.
I love the re-signing reports.
Yeah.
I think
like so-and-so re-signed. It's not just they're staying in college. They've re-signed.
I think I saw it. Was it USC? You showed me USC was the first team to do this.
They did.
With their quarterback, Maiva.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, crazy what's going on in the world of college football. How different it is now, just a couple of years removed from the new NIL era. All right, we'll talk more football coming up. Actually, let's do it right now because it's time for some Krusty's Corner. Brought to you by Greystone Roofing and Construction. That's greystone-roofing.com. Take it away, Krusty.
Hey, kids! Your old pal Krusty is going to teach you 5 new words.
You're not wrong about that.
From Dallas, Texas, number 55, Brian Waters.
Thank you very much, Lucius. I appreciate you always playing that. And thank you there for Greystone for being a part of this. Hey, Lucius, I had to mention something.
Yeah, dog, what up, what up?
I was, I'm walking around in Raleigh House, right?
I love Raleigh House.
I get stuck in the SMU section thinking, man, Lucius would love this.
Right. That's right. Right. Stuff.
Yeah.
I think SMU has the best gear of any team in Raleigh House.
The colors are awesome.
And I know
and they switched up to that triple D. Like they leaned into that triple D thing, and that right there made me pop. I'm like, I love that Dallas, the cursive Dallas. I just love
the cursive Dallas and the city logo with the pony it in the middle of the D. SMU with the red, white, and blue, and it's not just a patriotic thing. Red, white, and blue together on a uniform color.
Outstanding.
Is outstanding.
It is.
But I think that SMU and Raleigh House, this sounds like an ad for Raleigh House here.
We do love Raleigh House.
We do love Raleigh House. But they've got Oklahoma, Texas. They've got everything. They've got Prairie View A&M. They've got everything you can imagine. Stars, Rangers, Mavs. They're friends of the program. Yep. They had us out for a bunch of stuff. But, man, every time I walk over, I wish I'd have gone to school at SMU just to wear the gear.
Pretty stuff, dude.
Just to wear the gear.
It is sick.
They've got the quarter zips, the hoodies. Yeah. They've got golf shirts, long sleeve shirts, the dry fit, vests. Damn. I go over my little LSU section. They have stuff there, but it's so small compared to how nice that
is. That Mustang on that T-shirt just running, his mane flowing.
It's crazy. Crazy how much. And they've got good. Because I was, getting stuff for Bennett, in Texas and things like that. But, man, I find myself walking over there, and I'm like going, damn, why didn't I go to school here just to get the gear? But, hey, hats off to – if you have to go get gear,
They had maids in the dorm over there in SMU in the 80s, late 70s and 80s. I seen a little documentary about it. They had maids, bro.
They had maids?
Yeah, in the dorms, dog. What are we talking about?
Cleaning
up the rooms and everything when you leave for
I'll
you.
I'll tell you get what. Out of here. We didn't get LSU. We had the athletic dorm. I'll tell you what, the athletic dorm was cool. Lived in the athletic dorm with Shaq. Shaq, the basketball.
That's badass.
Yeah, him and Chris Jackson, and those basketball guys.
Ah.
Did you
have to share, bathroom community space with
They had a deal where they had it. It was pretty much you wore the shower shoes. And the towels and stuff like that.
So you showered in the same spot as Shaq did?
Yeah, no, but the basketball wing was down. We had a big athletic dorm, and it was like two levels, three levels. And Shaq and the basketball guys were down on one end.
Okay, that's good, because I was worried about your toothbrush and your shoes.
No, we were up to.
Isn't that funny, Broadus?
I'm so funny.
Yeah,
funny. That toothbrush was in my crack, Shaq, for my last class.
Yeah, Shaq. Yeah, keep winning, Shaq.
Can he even fit on a normal toilet?
I can't imagine. No, I think he has an industrial, one-of-one toilet that he sits on at his house.
Something.
There's no way he's got to run to the mill.
The knees in his face.
I can't imagine what he does when he's just out in public.
Yeah. You hold it.
I'll tell you what's crazy,
you
though.
You just go constipated.
That, the Chris Jackson, right? My guy.
Abdul Maul Rauf.
There you go.
He's still got a wet shot to this day. To this day.
My guy, we didn't know he had Tourette's.
Oh.
And so he would be in the dining hall. Making the sounds and stuff like that. Exactly.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And we were all kind of looking at each other like, that dude's a badass player, but what's going on What's going on? We didn't know. We didn't know what steroids were. And our whole team was taking them, but we didn't know. We did not know what was going on with steroids. We were in that Bosworth era, where they were getting suspended. Like, Brian Bosworth will not play in the Orange Bowl.
Classic steroids, too, like DECA and stuff like that. Winstrol.
Like Nebraska. Nebraska was way ahead of everybody here. They had a guy named Boyd Epley that was their strength coach. And Boyd was like, line up. Here, take your shot, We played Nebraska in the bowl games. It's like Dave Remington and those guys.
Yeah.
It's like they had legs on their
huge.
On their shoulders.
They were roiding.
They were so roided up. Dean Steinkuhler. I am hip.
That's a fake name.
Oh, man. Nebraska had some players.
Steinkuhler was a linebacker?
He was a guard. Dean Steinkuhler.
With the neck roll.
Played with the Oilers. They had Dean Steinkuhler, Mark Trainerwitz. They had some dudes now. But I am hip was a back. Turner Gill,
Turner Gill,
local guy. But anyway, they were steroided up.
361 says they had maids at Southwestern University in Georgetown, late 80s.
There you go.
And the 817 says they had maids in the athletic dorms at TCU in the 90s. So
living high on the hog out there.
That's big time, dude. I'm just telling you. Imagine being a college kid.
I can't.
You know it's handled.
All we ever had to do, the dining
Those
hall.
Those poor maids, man. The crap they probably had to clean up.
The commodes were never good. Yeah.
No. Why is it stuck together?
Yeah.
This is sticking.
Yeah.
Still sticking.
The whole thing with the, in the athletic dorm, we had the dining hall, which was great. The ladies at the dining hall were some of the nicest ladies ever with the fetus.
Legendary.
I love lunch ladies.
Lunch
man.
Dining ladies.
All right. Real quick there. I'm sorry. Chargers. We got beat. All right.
Yeah, we lost.
But I'm going to tell you this, what Jesse Minter did to you guys. I'm going to tell you what he did. Jesse Minter, if you go back and you watch the game, and I was curious of how he went from being poor in the first half to being better in the second half. And there's kind of a way that he did this. There's some method to his madness. When you break it down, and I was kind of charting what they were doing, but then I said, okay, I'm going to check the metrics on this too. In the first quarter, when Dak and CeeDee and those guys were going off, first quarter, he played cover 3, cover 6, cover 2, cover 1 is what he played. So 1 and 3 are kind of the same, very similar. 6 is, cover 2 to one side, and then, 4 on the other is what you got with the way the different drops and positionings and stuff. We all know what cover 2 is with two guys on the hash.
Right.
So he's getting crushed. He's getting crushed playing 3, 6, 2, and 1. In the second quarter, he's thinking, I got to do something different. In the second quarter, he starts playing 4, what's like 4 across. He plays 2. Which he did earlier in the first. He goes back to his 1 and he plays a little 3. So his main thing that he played, he went from playing cover 3 to playing cover 4 across, thinking that was going to help his defense. Not happening today. Dak is kind of tearing that up.
Yeah.
He goes into halftime. He's like, guys, we got to do something different here. We got to play a different brand of football if we're going to win this game. Third quarter, he comes out. He plays cover 6, which he did in the first. He goes and plays his cover 3, which he might have had a little bit more success with in the second quarter. And then he plays cover 2, which he felt like he had a little bit more success, probably. So in the third quarter, he's going to give you the cover 2 with the like that look, that zone look on one side and man look on the other side. So he's playing
with the 6.
Yeah, with the 6. So he does that in the third quarter. So now he's kind of got his offense is kind of stable. Mm-hmm. They're scoring some points. In the fourth, he's got you down now. What do you think he does when he's got that lead? What do you think he's trying to prevent?
Big plays.
Obviously, yeah.
Big plays.
Like Pickens hitting him deep down the field again.
He goes to cover 2. He goes cover 2, cover 4, cover 6 to end the game is what he does. When he rushed you in this game, now, just for example, let me just tell you this, too. In the first quarter he played 76% zone, 23% man. Hurt him a little bit. In the second quarter, he went 85% zone, 14% man. In the third quarter, he played 100% zone. Fourth quarter, he played 100%.
Yeah, he just went away from man totally.
He just totally went away from the man coverage is what he did. He also went into, he never rushed more than 5 in this game. In the first quarter, he rushed 4, 5, 3, the number of guys that went.
Mm-hmm.
He went, in the second quarter, he rushed 4 and 5. In the third, he went 4 and 5. And then the fourth quarter, all he did was rush 4, played coverage.
Yeah.
That's that right there. You wonder why sometimes you're like, well, what did Schottenheimer, what were they dealing with there? This guy saw that some of his coverages early in this game, like his cover 3 was getting him beat. He tried it a little bit in the third and went away from it. He said, you know what? I'm going to just throw it as a changeup. But where he got this game stabilized was playing the cover six with the man in the
interesting
in a little bit
that's
of the
Fangio special,
right? Yeah, he just given Dak problems in the past.
Yeah, he gave Dak's problem. He went in this game. He went base defense 7 snaps, nickel 35 snaps. He played dime 14 of them. So he tried. He's like, listen, I'm not going to let these guys. Dallas is playing all their 11 personnel stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing real quick. This is on the 4th-and-1 play. I don't know if you guys noticed this. They had Turpin in the backfield as the running back.
Yeah.
With Lipke as the offset. It's like he totally disregarded that they were even going to think about giving the ball to Turpin.
To Turpin.
He gambled with Hunter Lipke being offset to his defense's right. You know what he did? He slanted that way. And what happened is Caldwell beat Bass on a swim move.
Yeah, Bass ended up on the ground.
Yeah, he was super fast.
Yeah, Bass ended up on the ground, and then what happened was Tyler Smith couldn't get down inside to get the block. So Caldwell basically was sitting in the hole. When
they predicted what was coming,
they knew. They knew that with Turpin in the backfield, let's just slant to the fullback and see if we can get a stop here on 4th-and-1. And they did. That's just good defense.
If let's say it's Williams, you don't think they do the same thing?
I don't think they slant. I think they try and play the thing straight up. Now they might have slanted to the offset. Being, when I say offset, like you have an eye back like behind Dak and then somebody to the left or to the right. If Dallas would have just gone straight eye, you might not have got the slant. But they scouted you well enough to know when you play offset in that down and distance situation, you're probably going to hand the ball to Hunter Lipke
well
there.
Done.
And they slanted the front to that direction, to the side of the fullback. So Jesse Minter.
It was a huge play.
Jesse Minter, defensive coordinator of the day, stopping your Dallas Cowboys.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
There he is, Trusty's Corner, every day at 3:40 here in the G-Bag Nation. Let's go ahead and get a football fix. Who ticked off Santa? Clinchers and a franchise quarterback. Has he emerged? That's next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.